Mini episode 64 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by DOU Productions, delivering coverage of sports and pop culture through columns, live blogs, and original videos. Follow them on the web at generationchatter.blogspot.com.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello and welcome to the FDH Lounge. Specifically, this is going to be an episode of the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider, our show within a show. And it's also on the Sportsology platform. We're very grateful, as always, to our good friend Russ Cohen of Sportsology for making this available to us. It's great to be able to use for when we are having discussions with guests. I am FDH managing partner Rick Morris here tonight in the lounge. We are celebrating our fifth anniversary of the lounge this week, specifically January 14th, 2012, this Saturday. We will be uploading some very special content to the fdhlounge.blogspot.com, where you can find all of our programming. Going to be having our discussion with Christopher Cross going up there, as well as some great roundtables among our FDH Lounge dignitaries, and both conversations with great guests and conversations among our crew of contributors known as the FDH Lounge dignitaries. These have been our hallmarks through the course of the 5 years of the program. While we're speaking of that, the last thing we're going to do before we hit the five-year anniversary mark, this is also representative of something that we've done through the course of the show. It embodies both the variety that we have had with the program as well as one common thread, and that is, of course, News Corp. We are speaking tonight with Mike Harmon from Fox Sports and also SwollenDome.com. We're going to be bringing him in a moment. But it's worth taking a look to see through the course of the 5 years of the FDH Lounge. Of course, when we've done the FantasyDraftHelp.com, and so since we incorporated that as a show within a show, we've had Mike Harmon on with us before. We've greatly appreciated having him on. Mike really, really knows his stuff. And that is not true of everybody in this industry, I must say. But I don't want to emphasize the negative. I want to emphasize the positive and talk about how great it is having Mike on. But when we've gone outside of the fantasy realm with the FDH Lounge through the course of the show, News Corp has been a very common thread running through the course of the show, whether it be Alice Hennigan from Fox News or Liz Klayman from Fox Business Channel, whether it be Eric Bowling, also from Fox Business as well as Fox News, whether it be Kenny Albert from Fox Sports, be sure and tune in on Saturday. I know everybody listening to this is going to be that New Orleans-San Francisco game Kenny's going to be calling is going to be great. Whether it be him, whether it be Alex Marvez from FoxSports.com, anytime you go to the well at News Corp, it's a great thing to be able to do. Len Robbins from the New York Post, I can't think enough of all the people who have been so great to us over the course of the 5 years of the program, and that certainly includes the gentleman that we're bringing on the program here just now. We've had him on, of course, with the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider show within a show on the FDH Lounge previously, as I alluded to. Love listening to his show, Fox Fantasy Freaks, on Sunday mornings. I've joked about that previously the number of times, and it's actually true, the number of times I've walked into Sunday Mass a little bit late because I couldn't get out of the car at the top of the hour, still listening to the show and enjoying it. So you can catch his stuff there. You can catch him on FoxSports.com, SwollenDome.com, and probably any number of other places that I have been too negligent to mention just now. But it's always a pleasure to bring this guy in and have a great fantasy discussion. We'll be looking back at the 2011 football season. Great to have him on, as always, Mike Harmon. Mike, welcome to the program tonight, sir. Great to have you back with us.
What is going on? What a fun year it was, because we all threw darts at the board every week and, well, surprises at every turn.
Well, I tell you what, there was a lot of that, and I have to say, it's very rarely do I hear anything on your program that I take exception to, and it's never anything that you say. I have to say that. You're always the voice of reason. Your co-hosts are pretty good, too, but I got to tell you, there was something that happened week one that had me gnashing my teeth. I don't remember if it was Peter or Nate But the guy that said that Ray Rice should be benched against the Steelers, I'm thinking, no, this is classic overmanagement. You have to endure the bad matchups with your megastars. And as I recall, you set the record straight immediately.
Well, the bottom line is it's week one. You give me that matchup in week nine, and we've seen by that point what the Ravens had done with their offense of hot and cold and back and forth, then perhaps we would have had something. But, you know, early on, we can't overthink it. You drafted him in the first round for a reason. And I think going forward, you know, he's one of the few running backs that anybody's going to have any confidence in as we go into 2012. I think you can number them on one hand, and then it's a bunch of rolls of the dice. So I think what we had this year were a bunch of cases like that where you just get yourself into overthinking. It's much like when you're in the draft room, and I'm starting to see this with fantasy baseball 2012, people trying to speculate on where guys are going to end up and health and so on. And, well, Ray Rice was probably the best example of that and led to a lot of losses in week one.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Hopefully too many people didn't go along with that. Like I said, you set the record straight immediately, so if folks were listening to you, then they were okay. As far as baseball goes, just a quick note on that. The real head-scratcher, of course, at this point, I think we all have to assume that the appeal is going to go down in flames, but where Ryan Braun gets slotted, that's been the subject of a lot of head-scratching that I've seen. A lot of people saying he could still be worth the third or fourth round pick, you know, based on what he's going to do when he gets back. But nobody really seems to be talking. Maybe it's impolite to talk about this. Is he going to be the same guy when he gets back? I mean, look at what he's getting suspended for. And I understand it's not the classic case of roids. I'm not exactly clear on what the specific thing is that he's getting suspended for, but nobody seems to want to talk about, is he going to be the same guy, or is this going to be, it won't be Manny Ramirez because he's also old, but the Braun thing, just that might be the number one puzzle of the year, huh?
Yeah, it kind of jumped up on us, and the question becomes, they keep putting it in terms of it would be embarrassing to him. It's like, well, do you want to go on one hand and be amongst the guys that are known cheats or presumed cheats, as we see the Hall of Fame balloting this past week, and we will get our ultimate test next year when a bunch of guys join the ballot, or are you on the other side, whatever it is in your personal life that's so embarrassing that crushes you? It would seem to me that the latter would be the one you just get it done. I mean, people will have their fun for 15 minutes, and away it'll go. I mean, I know there are segments of every fan base that are still going to be knuckleheads, but we know that. That's just the way it works. And, you know, is it because you're cheating? Is it because of something, you know, physical that they're not disclosing for whatever reason of the embarrassment? But it sounds to me like we're probably looking at the 50 games when it's all said and done. And I did a mock last week where he ended up at the back end of the fourth round. And I think it goes to the Nelson Cruz kind of philosophy. If I get him for 120 games, what do I get?
Yeah, you know, that's a great way of looking at it. And unlike Nelson Cruz, you know what those games are going in. So, you know,
well, no, that's just it. I mean, with Cruz, you still had the numbers, even though he missed all the time, and hamstring injuries are going to be persistent with him. But, you know, in that lineup, in that ballpark, you're going to get your power. And I think with Braun, you're saying unless there's something that just causes him to shrink away, so to speak, that he'll be back in for his 110 games or whatever the suspension ultimately is, that you get your normal production. Although we do have to temper that with the loss of Prince Fielder.
Absolutely, yeah. The lack of lineup protection was already going to make this a little more iffy for him. But as far as reflecting back at 2011 on football again here, of course, one of the big storylines for the season, I suppose, would be, and then I guess there's a little bit of an overlap of quote-unquote real football and fantasy football, but the three dominant offenses in the league with New Orleans, Green Bay, and New England, and each of them having that mega tight end. Now, Finley didn't really have the numbers that some owners might have suspected coming into this year, but what Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham did going forward, that was just absolutely amazing. You know, you had Antonio Gates years ago, his physical freak that got converted to the position. But really, the thing that kind of struck me, Mike, over the last decade, it's sort of more been the scat backs in the league who've been causing the matchup issues. And when you hear about teams wanting to cause matchup problems, it's generally been the smaller guys. But this year just proved if you got a big guy who can actually run, that's a matchup problem of a different nature. You don't know whether to put a linebacker or a safety on the guy.
Well, that's just it. When you get the matchup, and we knew coming into the year that, you know, we'd see big numbers from a number of tight ends. It was just a question of nobody could have expected what Gronkowski ended up doing. And certainly in the fantasy playoffs, he didn't do people a whole lot of good. So they're still a little salty if he brought him to the dance and then went and played with somebody else. But the fact of the matter is, between Gronkowski and Graham, you've got two monsters. Obviously, Gates' issues physically of the tolls taken on him. But you've got a number of guys that, depending on whether you get the point per reception, it's a whole different ballgame with tight ends this year. Yes, you have three or four guys, and if you're in a standard league next year, you're going to look to those potent offenses. And I suspect you might get a little bit of a bargain on Finley. He still finished with eight touchdowns, but compared to those other guys, I mean, you're looking at, what, 60% of the receptions that Jimmy Graham put forth when it was all said and done in terms of staying healthy and really being a part of the offense. So I think it's interesting. 14 guys finish with more than 50 receptions at the tight end position, but next year's draft board is going to be awful interesting. You know, how high do you reach up for Gronkowski with Hernandez still being there, and does New England decide at some point, well, you know what, we need another receiver to go along with Wes Welker and bring things back to what we were used to. And then also, you know, the running back position as a whole, you know, kind of ties into this in terms of, you know, are you getting the points for the reception as they spread out these offenses and they dilute what the guys, you know, the presumed number one guy's value truly is.
That's true. That's a very good point. And on the tight ends, how much credence do you give this? When you look at Gronkowski, when you look at Graham, New England really never established that second wide receiver to go along with Wes Welker. I thought it was going to be Ocho at the beginning of the year. That was a flop, at least from a statistical point of view. In New Orleans for years now, you know, we've been joking about Lance Moore and, you know, everybody not named Marcus Colston there, versus in Green Bay you had Jordy Nelson step up. Is that something right there when you're looking to see who can be one of those tight ends on that level? I mean, at least in terms of those three instances, it looks like if there's a team that doesn't have a number two wide receiver who can really assert himself, that seems to leave the room for Graham and Gronkowski maybe to take it to the next level.
Yeah, I think those are the two guys as we go forward are going to be drafted several rounds ahead of other folks for the simple fact as well that they become favorite red zone targets. Obviously, we saw that with Gronkowski last year, and we expected more receptions, I think, from Aaron Hernandez. Not that his, 79 were any slouch. I mean, still top five at the position. But we expected him to be the guy between the 20s and for Gronkowski to just vulture goal line. So, you know, you saw that split, and really they just became the number one and number two receivers with Welker doing his usual magic in the PPR world. With New Orleans, they've got a lot of decisions to make with this squad in terms of contracts to those wide receivers and what they do with Colston and how they spread out looks as we go. So I think those are the two guys who I feel safe on, that they're the number twos going forward, regardless of whatever personnel moves we see made. I think, you know, you start getting into a little more of a risk factor. Gates will drop off, I think, in most leagues, just people saying, okay, what am I getting for 10 games? Much like the Braun and Nelson Cruz, you know, little divergence of, all right, what can I expect in his limited work, particularly with Norv Turner coming back? And, well, we know they're going to score points and give up a lot of points. Brandon Pettigrew drops a lot of balls and, you know, the confidence. He's a potential monster, but still going to drift down. Tony Gonzalez, great overall numbers, but consistency being an issue. And then Jason Witten just doesn't see enough red zone love. So I think those two guys differentiate themselves and really separate themselves from the pack.
It really seems like they do. And I want to stay on this in a macro sense, looking at the strategy for a second, Mike. You throw in guys like Vernon Davis, who had a little bit of an off year relative to at least maybe what some people thought might happen. A guy like Jermaine Gresham, who's on his way up there. We've been saying at FDH for the last year or so that it's getting to be a situation we thought where things were changing and you could kind of lean back a little bit on getting your tight ends, that you maybe didn't have the four or five guys like there had been. You got to get one of these guys. Now, obviously, Graham and Gronkowski have asserted themselves. They're on a tier unto themselves, and they should go early in all leagues, it seems like. Is it still a situation, though, where if you're one of these other top-level guys, or like you said, Gonzalez or somebody like that, a Jason Witten, Does it seem like because of the quality and the quantity at that tier, if you don't get one of the big two, you can just kind of lean back and wait for one of those guys to fall to you?
Yeah, I think you basically have to. I'm starting to see a little bit of mock draft coverage for 2012, as scary as that is. Not that we can include the rookies yet, but just kind of looking at the tea leaves, if we were to roll out the dice and do it right now as is, you know, you're looking at a three-round gap, four-round gap before you come back for the next group of tight ends. I mean, Gronkowski, you know, I saw in one mock went at the end of the second round, just saying, you know what, if he's going to catch that many balls, we know he's going to be a red zone guy. So you just keep the ball rolling. So I think you're potentially going to get value. I don't know that people are going to necessarily jump up and grab Jermaine Gresham. I think he's the guy I'd hang the star on, and why you so astutely threw him out there. I mean, I think, you know, people are going to look at his overall numbers and kind of shrug, but you see the base of that offense and how young they are, and we presume in 2012 they see what they do with the secondary receiver spot, but also probably Bernard Scott becomes the number one guy, a little more of a speed option and can open the offense up a little bit more. So I think he's a guy. Fred Davis coming off the suspension, we'll see what his role is. You have to assume Washington makes a move to have a more stable quarterback position. Of course, it is Washington, and, well, we don't trust Mike Shanahan because Chris Cooley will be back as well. So, I mean,
right.
Of course, we'll have to see how the chips fall there. And then Brent Celek is one of those great high-risk, high-reward kind of guys, depending on how early you want to go on to that. Because, I mean, we saw for a stretch of the season he was absolutely dominant. But as quickly as he came on, he disappeared. So those are a couple of guys that I think we'll be looking at and then trying to figure out, you know, what role Dustin Keller has. Vernon Davis, if they're really going to commit long-term to Alex Smith, how much upside does he have?
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, there are so many names in there, and it seems like the depth at the position, at least for statistical performers, and that's what fantasy, of course, is all about, seems like it's never really been deeper than it is right now. I'm wondering how much you make of this as well, the notion of 2011 as we move forward being a real transition year at quarterback. I mean, it's easy to just look at the headlines and say no Favre, no Peyton Manning. You did have, you know, Rodgers, Breeze, and Brady really kind of putting themselves on another tier, much like the tight ends we just talked about. But aside from that, you got Michael Vick, who looks like he falls off the top tier from 2011 to 2012. Newton and Stafford certainly moving up, I think a lot of people would say. Tony Romo, who's been a top-tier guy for many years now, kind of consensus, is he really that much better than Eli Manning or Matt Ryan as you go into next year and you look at their continued development in those offenses? So it seems to me like it was a year of great flux and a year where maybe you had a little bit more turnover at the top than past years. How do you see it?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, Michael Vick was a guy that, you know, he was the approach was caution player coming into the year. I mean, because last year statistically just so much different and from a fantasy perspective so much more consistent in 2010 than I think we'd ever seen him. So, you know, with the big play threats, and obviously we got to figure out what happens with DeSean Jackson and his contracts and whether he goes Santonio Holmes on you if he does come back. So you've got some issues there in terms of personnel. But, I mean, you look at the speed, you look at LeSean McCoy, you give him a full off season. I have to assume he's better. How much better? I don't know. I mean, because really his value was predetermined and really weighted on how many times he ran the ball into the end zone and whether he, you know, can match what Cam Newton did this year. And certainly Cam, we saw a little bit more of Brandon LaFell, so we're hanging a star on him, you know, as for potentially a breakthrough wide receiver opposite Steve Smith. And in theory, they figure out how to fix the running game a little bit, so it's not all on Newton's shoulder. But, you know, Newton cracks into the top 12, I would think. Tebow, depending on, you know, what they do offensively there, he's going to be one of your top backups. And look, it took us 15 minutes for the T word to come up. That might be a record on talk radio right now. As far as the other quarterbacks
that
we... That
was just Peter aneurysm.
Yeah, no, it had to happen. You know, I didn't sing alongside it, so we just put it there and leave him on the table. You know, I had Manning and Romo rated basically equally this year. I think the guy that's really going to be the question mark and Matthew Stafford I had rated way too low. I had him as a back-end QB1 for fear that we'd have another fluke injury, and obviously he stayed upright.
We all did, Mike. He had to play 16 games. We all had him way too low. You know, he finally did it now.
Finally did it, so now we get into that Matt Schaub question of can he do it again? And while with Matt Schaub, we clearly saw that that wasn't going to happen. But the guy that I think is really going to be the question mark player for next year, actually there's two of them. There's Phillip Rivers with all of his interceptions, probably going to lose Vincent Jackson, who, you know, I think we saw quite clearly this year is not a number one wide receiver on a weekly basis. He's got great potential, but week to week, you don't know what you're getting. But is Matt Ryan? Because Matt Ryan was silent for about half the season, and he was absolutely dominant for the other half. So, you know, in the end, it's a nice overall scheme, but on a week-to-week basis, he remained a maddeningly, can I say that? Can I spit that out?
Yeah.
Inconsistent player. I mean, look back to his game against Philadelphia, where he threw for 4 touchdowns in week 2. He looked awful for most of that game. Yet, with the 4 touchdowns, gets him off and pacing for a big fantasy day. And so I think as we look at what they do to shift that team up, and it'll be interesting to see how much they use Jacquizz Rodgers, and obviously with Julio Jones and Roddy White back. Roddy White now gets into the Pro Bowl. Yay, because we all love the Pro Bowl so much. You know, he's just got so many weapons that, you know, he's still a top 10 guy, but I wouldn't blame people if they were hesitant to pull the trigger on him.
How much is it? I know it's not a perfect correlation. Lyon had great games when Julio Jones was there and sucked when he wasn't. It's not a perfect correlation, but in terms of looking the next year, projecting more time for Julio Jones in that offense, another offseason of getting immersed in it, is there reason to look at Ryan? And yeah, I mean, he's got the inconsistency, but to look at him and see the kind of potential for what somebody like Stafford did. Stafford's issues were physical as opposed to anything else. He stayed healthy. But in terms of Ryan, I mean, boy, when you got Julio Jones, you know, and Roddy White there, much less Tony Gonzalez, it's hard not to look at that and salivate.
Yeah, as long as he can pick up a 4th-and-1 once in a while, you might have. No, I'm just kidding. I think when you look at what they were able to do with Julio Jones, not unlike, again, going back to what we saw this past week in that Denver-Pittsburgh game, you know, if you can get them to commit to try to stop the run and all of a sudden, you know, that 15-yard slant becomes an 80-yard touchdown sprint. And I think you're looking at the same thing with Julio Jones. You have that opportunity, and the one knock on Ryan is always he doesn't have the great arm strength. You know what? Doesn't have to have great arm strength. Just needs to find the spot and catch those two speedsters in motion and in flight and away they go. So I think the potential's there to get over that 30-touchdown hump, maybe get to that 35, 36. But again, I want to see Julio Jones get through a full year without recurring hamstring injuries, too.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. He's got a lot to prove here. In terms of the quarterbacks coming into the league, and there's a lot of obviously hype about both Andrew Luck and RG3, for anybody that's looking and extrapolating based off of what Cam Newton did this year or even something else like Matt Hasselbeck going in and without benefit of a real classic offseason, a brand-new system, puts up one of his best years statistically. I think everybody had really overstated coming into this year how much the lack of an offseason was going to hurt. He had a lot of guys coming in a lot of places with a little more instant impact than we were looking for. So I'm sure that's going to hype the expectations fantasy-wise for Luck or RG3 well beyond what they typically would be, because I think people typically know to lay off rookies. But by the same token, nobody's going to want to miss out on the next Cam Newton. So what do you see for 2012 with these guys?
Well, by the way, we
got to know where they land, though. And I know it's not a completely fair question. We got to know where they land, but just in a vacuum right now.
Yeah, in a vacuum. I mean, you look at Andrew Luck, he's going to go into a full rebuild. I mean, they've got a lot of veterans on both sides of the ball in Indianapolis, and it sounds like they just want to blow that up. So obviously the other guy that we watch, new old faces, new places, what ends up with Manning, I sincerely doubt that there's anything to the Jets rumblings. I think it makes for good content, but that's about it. As for RG3, you know, you have the potential for the pinball numbers. But again, where does he end up? Is he a guy that ends up challenging Blaine Gabbert in Jacksonville? Is he a guy that, I mean, is he in Washington? Is that necessarily a Shanahan thing, you know, a creation that comes out there? I mean, certainly we've seen the ability to do both on the field, and I think, you know, the guy that's still playing this weekend certainly is changing how people are looking at the quarterback position at least a little bit, provided they have a sound defense. And generally, if you're drafting that high, your defense probably isn't very good either, right? So, you know, most of these teams, you know, they're going to be work in progresses. And for fantasy purposes, I see no reason why RG3 can't give us some thrills. Not that anybody was expecting these fun numbers out of Cam Newton. I can remember too setting up a draft for our radio league, you know, with my colleagues Burns and Lundy and some of the guys from FoxSports.com, and my man John Halpin, who writes for the FoxSports.com site, joked. He goes, "I'm in for that time. By the way, can I just have number one so I can draft Cam?" And in the end, he wouldn't have seemed so idiotic some 4 months later as we rewind the season.
Yeah, that was truly amazing. I mean, from a statistical point of view, just about unprecedented for a quarterback to do that. But, of course, you mentioned there, like everything with Fox Sports, you've got the show Sunday mornings, of course, Fantasy Freaks, FoxSports.com, all of your columns there, SwollenDome.com. We always love to give our guests a chance to plug away here. So, Mike, anything we didn't talk about in enough detail, please go to it.
Oh, boy. We're going to start rolling up on Fantasy NASCAR, which I know you're going to want in on. The challenge is coming up on FoxSports.com in a couple of weeks. I'll make sure to get the email out so we all get our groups rolling. Got a fantasy preview that'll go up on SwollenDome.com for that. Starting to creep into fantasy baseball now. And in 3 weeks' time, I'll be wandering around the streets of Indianapolis. So look for updates on SwollenDome.com. A little bit of work for FoxSports.com, but videos of the parties and the general stupidity that I find myself in when I go and leave my Southern California home and return to the cold.
Well, Super Bowl week, cold or no cold, is always a great time. So I wish you all the best that week. I know you are going to be living it up and continuing to provide the great coverage. Mike, thank you for coming on here. Great way to celebrate 5th anniversary of the show is by doing segments like this. Appreciate we've been able to have you on previously. Look forward to doing it again.
Can't wait for the next call. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Mike Harmon, the great Mike Harmon from Fox Sports and FoxSports.com. We appreciate having him on here. As we say, stay tuned to the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. Saturday, January 14th, we will have up for you on that day our conversation with Christopher Cross and our great 5-year commemoration with the FDH Lounge dignitaries. Thanks very much for checking us out here on this mini episode of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Lounge Managing Partner Rick Morris.